Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Oh, he's so cool. He has no decision. He's just crying to television. But some thought that this was sad and others thought it mad.
Hey there, everybody. Happy Friday. My name is Patrick Foster. You're listening to the Rockin' the Suburbs podcast. On behalf of my co-host, co-founder, and good friend Jim Linehan, whose voice you will hear very soon again on this podcast, I want to welcome you to the last show of this week. It is the first day of July as you listen to this. Happy July. And all those of you preparing for a long 3-day weekend here in the U.S. of A., I hope you're all ready to have a nice holiday weekend. Hopefully it'll be safe and peaceful for everybody everywhere. We can only hope. Today we're going to have an episode of What Was First. And if you listened yesterday, I was telling you about all the wonderful feedback and suggestions we've gotten for this series. And I totaled them all up this morning while preparing for this show. And there's 46 different suggestions sent in by a variety of listeners out there. Some sent in multiple, some sent in one or two. But what we did was we put them all in a big hopper, spun the wheel. The one we pulled out of the hat was sent in as a suggestion by Harris King, and it was Ork Records, O-R-K. And this is a fascinating one, and I'm really glad this one came up because it's one of my all-time favorite bands. And also, I am lucky enough to have a box set that came out. Well, it's not really a box set. It's more of a book with two CDs in it that's shaped like a CD size from the amazing label Numero Uno. It's Numero Uno 060, and it's called Ork Records, New York, New York. So I have a wealth of information to draw from to tell you this very interesting story. Some of you may know it. It's definitely deeply entwined in punk rock and roll history, that's for sure. There are those who consider Ork Records perhaps the first indie label that was ever out there in the United States. And that's definitely an interesting DIY point for sure. Definitely one of the key components of the punk explosion that shaped music and certainly changed my life and the lives of many, many, many others. So thank you, Ork Records. Let me give you some background, because the band we're dealing with is Television. But it didn't just start out of nowhere. The main two components of Television at the early days were Tom Verlaine and Richard Hell. Tom Verlaine was formerly known as Thomas Miller, and Richard Hell was known as Richard Myers. They were going to a school, a boarding school, prep school in Delaware called Sanford School. And they ran away after a couple attempts, I believe. Finally were successful. They ran away to New York City. They both wanted to be poets. This is the early 1970s we're talking about. And eventually, after being in New York City for a while, they formed the Neon Boys, recruiting a drummer called Billy Fika, who was also from Delaware, I believe. The Neon Boys disbanded after not too long, and they never did find another guitar player. They wanted to add a guitar player to the guitar of Verlaine, the bass of Richard Hell, and the drums of Billy Fika, despite auditions by Dee Dee Ramone and Chris Stein. The Neon Boys eventually broke up. They did record a couple of songs that came out later in about 1980, I think, but this is around 73 or so they recorded this. Billy Fika went back to Delaware, and while he was gone, Richard Hell and Tom Verlaine found a guy called Richard Lloyd to play guitar. And Fika returned to New York City in early 1974, and the four-piece lineup that would become Television was set. And they, during this time, and during the Neon Boys, had met a guy called Terry Ork. He was a scenester who had come to New York around 1968, entranced by the allure of Andy Warhol and the factory scene and all the art and bohemian stuff that was going on around that. Terry had stayed in the city working here and there. He hadn't really done a whole lot except for make a lot of friends. He got to know a lot of people. He was down on the periphery of the factory scene. He was involved in some rock and roll stuff. But he was mainly on the scene, the music scene and the art scene. And he basically became the band's manager. He gave them some equipment that they needed, and he gave them a place to practice, more importantly, which was his own living room in his loft. So here's a little quote from the amazing book that accompanies this Ork Records set. Ken Shipley and Rob Sevier are credited with compiling all the words together. It's also a tremendous amount of photographs and a lot of archival interviews and stuff that went into this. There was a lot of different things that pulled it together. Let me read to you now from this book. When Billy Fike returned from Delaware, the lineup was complete. Now all they needed was a name. Hell thought of the name Television, Verlaine said. He was really drunk one night, and he had this list of about 200 names. And he looked around his room, and he saw his television set and put Television on the bottom of the page. He had all kinds of names, Goo Goo, the Libertines. They rehearsed nightly for 3 months, going so far as to videotape at least one session, before Ork suggested they attempt to ply their wares live. In the run-up to his William Ork Presents Television gig at the Townhouse Theater on Saturday, March 2nd, 1974, Ork solicited quotes from interviews Scott Cohen, journalist Danny Fields, and Rebel Without a Cause director Nicholas Ray. Whether or not any of Television's celebrity endorsers had actually heard the group is anyone's guess. But for the 100 people at the Townhouse that night, New York rock and roll would never be the same. So they played that seminal show, and by the end of March, they had actually talked their way into allowing a guy called Hilly Kristal to give them a gig at a dive bar in the Bowery called CBGB. And they returned frequently after that to play on Sunday nights and at other times. And here's how Richard Lloyd described the band at the time. Quote, Richard Hell was our style man and made the posters, which we all put up with cornstarch and water or plaster of Paris. Tom was the musical director and generally permanently frustrated. He did not understand the act, and he screamed at Hell and me to stop moving around while we play. I know that my moves were born of the intensity with which I played, and Richard's moves were part of the act, but Tom just couldn't stand it. And slowly, under his unrelenting badgering, both Richard and I toned down the movement. Verlaine remembers it a little less dramatically. I was thinking Hell's stage moves were kind of stagey, and I thought maybe they were funny, but I didn't like funny. It seemed to be showbiz rock. After constant gigging throughout the year in New York, by December, Island Records had begun to show some interest in the band, and A&R man Richard Williams convinced one Brian Eno, who had recently left Roxy Music, to come to New York City and cut some tracks with Television. Actually, Eno came in. They actually cut some demos with him. They cut 5 songs in December of 1974. There's a great quote here from Richard Lloyd again. He says, Eno came in with all these whacked ideas. Let's glue the amplifiers to the ceiling. Let's cut up the lyrics and throw them in the air. We weren't having any of it. Lloyd would also imply that the Eno venture might have been doomed from the get-go. We weren't into experimenting, he said. We were into honing something that we'd already had a handle on. The idea was we didn't need to be produced so much as a chance for someone to give us an authentic reproduction. At this time, there was considerable friction, shall we say, developing between Verlaine and Hell. And when they played a gig with the New York Dolls, then being managed in the fading phase of their career by Malcolm McLaren, the future Sex Pistols guru tried to get the gig managing Television. When that didn't work out, he reportedly went back to England and took the look that Richard Hell was sporting. The torn clothes, the safety pins, the stitched up clothes, etc., etc. And he turned it into a look that he started selling clothes like that at his wife's Vivienne Westwood's clothing store called Sex in London. And you may know how the rest of that story goes. But let's get back to Television. Not long after McLaren tried to get the management gig of Television, during which he certainly complimented the heck out of the band and Richard Hell particularly, Richard Hell left Television and he went out on his own. Richard wanted independence both artistically and business-wise, Terry Ork said. He wanted to prove he could handle money and legal matters just as well himself. Verlaine recalled Hell's exit as more of a back-out than a peel-out. He was sheepish about leaving. He seemed kind of sad and nervous about it, where I was actually glad Hell quit. He was starting to say really weird things like, do you think we'll be as big as the Beatles or more of a cult band like the Kinks were at the beginning? And he wasn't kidding. I said, those bands played really well and we don't play good at all. And he looked kind of startled to hear this. Hell was captivated with the idea of stardom. I guess I was more thinking how we were going to make a record we'd like to hear in 50 years if we lived that long. To replace Richard Hell, the band were able to convince, with some help from Patti Smith, reportedly, to get bassist Fred Smith to join. He was playing with Blondie at the time, but that group had just started and wasn't really going anywhere yet. With the overtures from Island Records Silence, Television and Terry York decided to bring the band's damaged rock to the public on their own. Verlaine is quoted as saying, "In the 1970s, we thought it was stupid to go shopping things around. We thought, let's just start our own record company. And actually, we should have kept it going because in terms of money, we probably would have made 10 times as much. Terry York was our best friend," Verlaine said. "He brought us equipment, and at one time, when we needed it, he would buy us food. So we decided to name the record label after him, because we figured he might want to start a label and keep it going if it did well," which is exactly what happened. Here it is. On August 19th, 1975, Television went into a makeshift studio and recorded with J.D. Daugherty from the Patti Smith Band. And the result was the first record issued on Ork Records, Little Johnny Jewel.
My little Johnny Jewel, oh, he's so cool. He had no decision. He's just trying to tell a vision. Well, some thought this was sad, and others thought it mad. They're just scratching the surface. JJ could do the floor kiss. Or was he on display? No, no, not today. All that guy ever said, he said, I want my little wing head. He'd have to sleep at night. Over his head, sensation of flight. And he'd wake up dreaming. And he'd run down to the airport. The brush.
Verlaine said Little Johnny Jewel was about how people were maybe, quote, 200 years ago. Back then, when people got up in the morning, they knew what they had to do to get through the day. There were 100% less decisions. Nowadays, we have to decide what we want to buy at grocery stores, what job to take, what work to do. But not Johnny. For him, it's all right there. It's a freer state, and that's what my music is looking for. The record was a hit with critics. It got written up in a bunch of different places, including one major national magazine, and that certainly helped. On the record was the P.O. Box in Cooper Station, New York, of Ork Records, and all kinds of things started coming in there. And it says here in the book, Ork Records had no formal distribution scheme, leaving Little Johnny Jewel available for purchase only from the stage via mail order for $2, as advertised in Cream and the Village Voice, and from the door at CBGB, where it was also featured on the jukebox. After blowing through the first 500 copies, Television and Terry York found themselves packing and shipping thousands of orders from the comfort of the Chinatown loft. "We've lost track of how many we sold," Verlaine told Zigzag in 1977, "but there's money there. We owe Terry money anyway." And that was it, folks. That was the start of Ork Records. Kind of amazing, huh? A little band who thought they might get a shot with a major label and a famous producer didn't really work out. And, of course, Terry York went on to continue running the label. And this Numero Uno collection collects a lot of it. And I'll just read you some of the names here. Richard Hell put out some solo stuff. The Feelies put out some stuff. Alex Chilton, Chris Stamey and the DBs. The Idols, Mick Farren and the New Wave, Cheetah Chrome, The Erasers, and Lester Bangs, the critic Lester Bangs, when he got into making some records. He put out Let It Blurt and another record on Ork Records. So, you know, really amazing. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 16 to, I don't know, 20 singles were released on the label. All collected here. It's pretty amazing. And Little Johnny Jewel started it all. I mean, this record, I think, was one that we mentioned during the SST, what was first. Greg Ginn had sent away for it after reading about it in the Village Voice, and it changed his attitude toward music. As far flung from Television to Black Flag, pretty amazing. And, of course, Television went on to a pretty successful career themselves. And the interesting thing was, it was a 7-minute song, Little Johnny Jewel. So they had to break it up. It's broken up at the first side at about the 3:30 mark. And then the second half of it was 4 minutes. So of the 7:30, you had to flip it over, kind of like American Pie, right? It was a bummer when you had that record and it faded out on the first side. But nowadays, of course, we can stream the whole thing and the compact discs and the LPs and all that. I mean, really, they released a single song that was meant for an LP. But hey, that was television. Another thing they did different. Ork Records gave it the catalog 81975. I was unable to really get a reason why it was called that. If anybody knows that, definitely get in touch. Out on October 1975, as we said, and the songs were published by Double Exposure Music, well, the song. And the original copy did not come in a picture sleeve. It was just on black vinyl with a red label that said Ork. It had the P.O. box printed there, Little Johnny Jewel Part 1. It was cut in mono. There was something wrong, apparently, with the 4-track, and they wanted it to be in stereo, but they had to release it in mono to get the syncing right. There are copies available out here in Discogs. It's going to cost you between $30 and $50 to get a halfway decent copy, but it's kind of cool if you want to, you know, buy something for your collection, especially if you're a huge television fan. Of course, all this stuff is available musically, but it's cool to have the original artifact. Of course, the original piece of vinyl sold out of that apartment loft in New York City all those years ago. Pretty amazing. So there it is. Thank you, Harris King, for the suggestion. Ork Records. Look it up if you don't know it, but start with television doing Little Johnny Jewel. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. I want to remind you as we go into this 3-day holiday weekend that love for you to get your new music picks for June in by Monday midnight if you could. Get those in, and we'll start working on putting those together. There's also a little poll still up at suburbspod.com/newmusic, all one word, and you can vote on which format you'd like. We're getting several votes in there, and see which format's going to come out on top and which one we end up using for new music next month. We're always interested in new ideas and shifting it up. So if you have any, let us know. You can send us an email, rock@suburbspod. You can follow us on the social medias @suburbspod, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, Intern Matt. Thank you very much, Intern Matt. We'll round all that stuff up. Also want to remind you that coming up on July 5th, Tuesday, is the next time we'll have a podcast for you. But also, that's the deadline to book your hotel rooms out in Chicago if you're going to join us for Suburbs Fest Midwest, which is going to get started on August 4th and run through August 6th. So you definitely want to get your hotel room. We'd love to see you. Just come and hang out. You don't stay all 3 days. You know, just come and hang out for a night. Can be done. We'll see if Herb Fernandez drives all the way out there and back. It's a long way. But we also have another one coming up in the fall, late September, early October, in the D.C. area. So if you can't make it in August, be sure to join us in September. All right. That's it for today, folks. Play out with a little more Little Johnny Jewel. We'll flip the record over, if you will. And on behalf of my co-founder, good friend, and co-host, Jim Linehan, we will talk to you guys next week.
A little Johnny Jewel, he's so cool. But if you see him looking lost, you ain't gotta come on so boss. Well, you know that he's paid. You know that he's paid the price. All you gotta do for that guy. Is wink your eye.
New York rock and roll would never be the same.